Hey there, web or podcast listeners. I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. One issue that is expected to be debated in the State House this session is legislation to create a retail market for cannabis sales in Vermont. Speaking on Vermont Edition last Friday, Governor Phil Scott said he wants to avoid moving too quickly on this issue.
From my standpoint, don't understand the rush here. And I don't believe it satisfies our economic needs. I don't think that that should be why we're doing this. And we should learn from other states. They're going through this. Others are going through this in real time, and we should learn from them.
The move to tax and regulate the sale of marijuana is just one of the many issues we'll discuss today with Senate President Pro Tem Tim Ash, who joins me in the studio now. Nice to have you with us,
Senator. Good afternoon, Jane.
So let's talk about marijuana, since the governor talked about it on Friday, and there's some differing opinions on how to move forward with marijuana, not just between the executive branch and the legislative branch, but even within the legislative branch, how that's going to move forward. You would like to fast-track legislation to create that tax and regulate framework. You just made a little bit of an eyebrow raise. Not the right way to phrase that?
Well, VPR says that I want to fast-track it. What I've said is I'd like us to move quickly through the process.
Is that semantics, or is that not
fast-tracking? No, I think fast track would imply that we're skipping due diligence, and I want to make sure that people understand we take this seriously, even though the Senate has already passed such a bill three times in recent years. But it is important that as we learn more from other states, that we're integrating that into our thinking.
So you want to move forward quickly. The governor says, why? We have other states to learn from. They're just getting started. Massachusetts, of course, just across the border has just gotten started. And there are these two opposing arguments. One says, let's wait and see how it works for Massachusetts and maybe we can do it better. Or Quebec, or whoever we want to be learning from. And the other says, Vermonters are getting their cannabis legally from other states. And those states or those places are benefiting. Why shouldn't we? So how do you, how can we bring those two sides together and sort of figure out the best approach while not losing out?
Well, when the governor says that he doesn't understand what the rush is, I would step back and say that for those who believe we should have a more rational approach to marijuana sales in the state, so it's not in the black market where people are buying who knows what from drug dealers or others, that it's been decades of people wanting that. So for them, this would not seem like we've been in a rush to pass this. What I hope the governor and the House will consider as we move forward is saying, okay, if we want to make sure that Vermont doesn't get in too fast, move too quickly, perhaps have too many stores too quickly, maybe some kind of interim step would be a limited number of licenses in the first couple years with a slow growth, so that we could be evaluating as we go and not have a system like in California, where their medical program was so much like the Wild West that it was impossible to rein it back in. So it could be that the Vermont way would be starting small and then letting it grow over time.
And how would you distribute those licenses or determine? I know this is all yet to be determined, but in the way you see it, how would you determine who gets to have a license? Do they have to have some sort of Vermont Vermont identity or like Vermont presence? Are you trying to talk about size? Because there are clearly a lot of people and a lot of businesses that are poised for this and want in, but then also, a lot of people who could lose out.
Well, if Vermont is going to have a niche in this market, it's going to be by doing it similar to the way we produce beer and market beer. It's going to be craft production. So for me, it's not really constitutional to say only Vermonters can own the stores or things like that. But what we could do is say, we believe small is good when it comes to the development of this market, so that we're not going to allow massive grow operations. We're not going to allow people to hold basically 20 stores throughout the state, but rather we're going to have each of the licenses granted at every step of the seed-to-sale system be rather modest in scale, so that typically Vermonters will be the ones who want to step up.
So it's sort of like a little bit of a regulate, but also an incentivizing. I mean, the beer one is interesting because certainly we like our small-scale craft brewing in this state. But, you can buy a huge company's beer in any gas station in the state. And we have the largest cider maker in the state that's owned by a large corporation. So we're not, it's not like we, you know, we sort of eliminate or exclude large companies in that way.
No, that's for sure. But if people are going to go to a retail outlet in Vermont, I think it's safe to say that the first place they're going to turn on the shelves is to local products made by farmers who they can actually meet and know where it is, know that it hasn't come from Philip Morris or some tobacco company who's probably right now contemplating how to take over the market nationwide.
Don't you have to create the legal framework, though, that keeps those companies out? Because, I mean...
Well, I think it's really letting local growers and local retailers get a foothold before the market gets taken over by the large national corporations. And so therein, again, we have an opportunity to find some middle ground between the governor and the House and the Senate's historical position by saying, you know what, even if we're going to slowly unveil licenses throughout the state, in the meantime, we should be setting up the legal framework so that when the light switch goes on, we're ready to hit the ground running. And right now, all the state agencies are basically sitting on their hands at the moment because they're not authorized to do anything.
Matt's calling in from Windsor. Hi, Matt. Go right ahead.
Hey, how's it going? I just got some comments about the saliva testing.
Saliva testing, you said. Yep, for marijuana.
Yeah, for one, it's going to come up. For one, it's inaccurate. And for two, why would I trust law enforcement with my DNA? I know it's supposedly supposed to be used for X, but we all know it's going to be used for Y. I'm going to refuse this at a roadside test, and they better make it, means so you don't end up losing your license for refusing this stupid test.
Okay, so Matt calling in, obviously concerned about a roadside test to check for impairment. This has been what the governor has said he'd like to see before he would like to sign a tax and regulate bill. We've heard from other lawmakers who agree that this is an area of concern. Matt's very worried about a roadside saliva test. What's your position?
Well, I think roadside safety is a concern for everyone, and it is today. We already have people driving, whether it's under the influence of alcohol, marijuana, opiates, other drugs. So this is already a concern. It will not be introduced if there is a legal market for marijuana sales. And I think Matt is right to be worried about saliva testing for two reasons. One is once that sample is on file, we have to make sure that we would not be allowing that to get used for other purposes. But also, there is no test right now that would accurately, conclusively determine whether someone is under the influence because marijuana stays in the bloodstream for so long. So I think drug recognition experts, which we already have proliferated throughout the state through our state police and local law enforcement, is a superior approach because they weigh a number of factors when determining whether someone's inappropriately driving under the influence. So the saliva testing, I know that the governor has really talked about making sure we can protect our roadways. We share that concern, of course, but the saliva testing might not be ready for many years.
Before we move on from marijuana, just a procedural question here, because you said you do want to move quickly in the Senate on a tax and regulate system for marijuana. There is some question about how that would fare in the House. Are you talking with your House colleagues about ways to make this bill palatable? I mean, I know that they would be able to put their mark on it as well, but to try to come up with a way that everybody can move forward.
Well, those conversations are starting. And one of the reasons we don't want the bill to get bogged down in the Senate is because we know there's such a long road ahead. And we want to begin that negotiation, if you will, not just with the House, but with the governor's office.
We're talking to Senate President Pro Tem Tim Ash. If you have a question, you can give us a call, 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to Jody in Demerston. Hi, Jody. You're on the air.
My concern is it doesn't feel that the Senate Education Committee is very well balanced. It appears that there is absolutely no one from a small rural community and no one from southern Vermont. Do you feel like this is equitable?
Jody, thanks for the call. Tim Ash, what about the Education Committee? This is a big issue right now, as it has been for many years, but especially coming to a head right now and looking at rural districts who are very, by and large, very concerned about Act 46 mergers, perhaps more so than some of the more urban areas of Vermont where mergers have seemed easier. So Jody's worried about the makeup of that committee.
Sure. And while we do not have someone on the committee from Windham County, where Jody is from, we do have four new members, all of whom I believe are in districts that include some community that has not been happy with the rollout of Act 46. We have new representatives of the committee from Washington County, from Franklin County, Rutland County, and Addison County, by my count. And each of those counties has had some community that's been struggling through this new merger process. So The geographic distribution on the committee is very strong. They'll be looking at those issues, as will our finance committee, which does have a senator who is from Windham County.
So what about this whole situation with Act 46 mergers? And again, Act 46 was the district merger bill. It offered communities a chance to voluntarily merge for a while. And then we're at the point now where they've been told, ones that weren't able to come up with a plan that met approval, have been told, here's what you're supposed to do. There's a lawsuit, I think now 32 towns have signed on to the lawsuit. It's a little bit in limbo here as we approach town meeting day. I think there's a lot of concern and question, but certainly what I've heard from a lot of rural areas is that they do feel like Montpelier's out of touch with what's happening in their communities and not necessarily taking into account how hard it is for them for various different reasons. So there's both the question, the legal question and the technical questions, but also this question of culture that often we feel in Vermont, whether it's Burlington or Montpelier, feeling like a different kind of place than many of the more rural spots in Vermont.
Well, of course, when we set up this bill, it was a multi-year process. And as you pointed out, the voluntary part of that process and the time period where people could receive tax incentives for moving forward have expired. Now we're at the stage where those districts who did not volunteer to come together are being directed to do so where it's appropriate. I'll point out that about 3/4 of the districts in the state have already complied with the law. So now we're talking about that last group. And they are exercising their right to go to court and say they don't like it. I don't think they're going to prevail in court, but perhaps I'll be wrong. So the bill is moving forward. And it's an amazing example of two governors and a couple hundred legislators at this point who have not stopped a multi-year process in its tracks because of a smaller number of constituents who are complaining. So sticking with something for 5 years is not the normal way the legislature works. But the idea that it's, in quotes, Montpelier who are making some of these last decisions, we have to remember it's a state board of education made up of citizens from throughout the state. I'm not sure any of them actually live in Montpelier. And the legislature itself is the one that passed this bill to move forward, which included people from larger communities and smaller communities. So when this has been the subject of polling in the past, it's been overwhelmingly positive and popular to try to bring together districts to get all the advantages we hope will come to be.
So how do you bridge that divide? Of course, it makes sense that the last few communities that are the most resistant would feel the most frustrated by this. And we don't know what's going to happen with the lawsuit yet. But assuming that the state prevails in that, then, you know, how do you make communities feel whole? Because there, again, there's this question of not just how do we do it mechanically, but then how do you sort of get families and communities on board to say this is the future of education in Vermont?
Well, I think we have to distinguish between school board members and parents. The parents at districts that have merged, we haven't heard many complaints from those parents. Often it's because the number of programming options has increased. The use of facilities has become more efficient and effective and offered more opportunities for kids. And that's really what this is all about, not about whether it's a challenge for school board members. And unquestionably, it has been. I've been on a local board. I know how hard this stuff is. But the point is not to satisfy the wishes of a subset of school board members. It's to deliver a quality education to kids. And we know throughout the state, particularly some of the smaller districts, they're not able on their own to offer the full range of classes and other kind of enrichment activities that the larger communities are. And what we're seeing in merged areas is that they are experiencing an increase in the access to just those kinds of opportunities.
So did you appreciate the part of Governor Scott's inaugural address when he talked about Middle School A and Middle School B that were in the same district and had very different offerings for their students? I mean, that seemed it's hard to tell how that kind of thing plays.
It actually gets to the heart of the whole point of Act 46 is to say we need to smooth out those differences between Middle School A and Middle School B using his examples. One of the challenges, though, is these transitions don't happen overnight. So we had a 5-year organizational period, if you will, where districts are coming together. It's probably reasonable to think that it might be 5 years more before we can fully appreciate what we've gotten out of this exercise. And I believe looking back, it won't be perfect and there'll be surely some bumps in the road. But overall, the quality of education will increase across the board in ways that I think can't be anticipated by some of the recalcitrant districts.
Overall, did you appreciate Governor Scott's inaugural address? Do you see areas for working together with the governor and the legislature? There's been a lot of tension in the governor's first term over some of the ways that the legislature perceived how he went about saying, I will or won't side with you on this, I will or won't sign this. So what did you think of the speech?
Well, I certainly appreciated that it was a much more positive message. It really seemed more conciliatory, and it's a message well-received, and we would reciprocate. The good thing about elections is it's an opportunity to hit a reset button when relationships have perhaps been somewhat fractured. And so in that regard, the message was very welcome. And the real test will be in the months ahead. One of the criticisms that many legislators have had in both parties as they've observed this administration is the failure for them to sit at the table from day one, work through the issues so that when we get to the end, we've been slowly building to a compromise agreement. Instead, it's waited out, and at the very last second drop a very difficult ask on the legislature. So that will be the first test. In the coming days, will we start seeing the faces of administration officials engaging with us on the big issues?
Today, we're spending some time here at the beginning of the legislative session surveying the landscape with Senate President Pro Tem Tim Ash. Now, technically, President Pro Tempore is roughly translated as president for the time being. The lieutenant governor is actually the president of the Senate, but in modern governance, the Senate president pro tem wields a lot of power. Not only is he or she a full-fledged member of the Senate and can vote on any legislation, the lieutenant governor can only break a tie, the pro tem has great influence on which pieces of legislation make it to the floor and when. So Tim Ash's style and priorities may be of interest to you as we look ahead to the next few months of lawmaking. Let's go to Cynthia, calling in from the Northeast Kingdom. Hi, Cynthia. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane and Tim. This is Cynthia calling from Concord, Vermont. And I just wanted to give some feedback concerning Act 46 in the Northeast Kingdom. We were able to bring together 8 towns, 7 schools under the new Kingdom East School District, and we passed that on the first vote. And it has opened up opportunities for our students. And we are very excited to present a budget where every single town is going to see a tax decrease in March. So it's been a tremendous amount of work, but we kept students at the center of what we were doing, and I think we're kind of the poster child of how well this can work.
Well, Cynthia, I appreciate that feedback. Also appreciate the idea that, no community can be characterized one way or another as, wholly this way or wholly another. So, Cynthia, I appreciate your feedback there on Act 46 working for you in Concord and for the communities that you've been working with. Tim Ash, I mentioned that you're working potentially on some constitutional amendments for the state of Vermont. These would be obviously changes to the Constitution. It's a long and involved process to get there. And I think you have 4 potential amendments that you're looking at. What are they?
Well, the first is one that we previewed last year, which it would be to create an equal rights amendment in the Vermont Constitution. So throughout our Vermont laws, there are protected classes for, say, labor or housing or employment, employment. And what we're looking at doing is putting right in the Constitution a protection for all classes of Vermonters, so gender based on gender, sexual identity, and so on. Second would be to modernize the language around slavery in our Constitution. With all of the discussions around implicit bias and racism in communities in Vermont throughout this country, very few people know that in the Vermont Constitution, while we pride ourselves on being the first state to abolish slavery, the Constitution is a little more complicated than that. It says slavery is prohibited except in these circumstances, including certain people under 18 and people over 21 if they're indentured. So we're going to modernize that, which we believe will send a really strong and important message to people of color and people throughout the state. We have a proposal. We're still discussing how we would introduce it to protect reproduction rights for women. Should the United States Supreme Court send this issue back to the states, Vermont's laws would be silent. There is some case law from many decades ago, which some say protects women. We believe we should put that in permanently so that we're not wondering about the status of women's reproduction rights at any given time.
You're talking specifically about abortion rights in
yes,
particular.
That is correct. And then finally, and this one is probably all of these are controversial issues in their own way, but moving towards a four-year term for governor, which I believe impacts all other policies, I've believed strongly that two-year terms really limit the ability of any governor to step forward with bold ideas and then work with the legislature to get them on board, allow the program to be implemented, sort of survive the early day implementation challenges, and then get to the other side and let voters really judge the performance of that administration. Instead, we have two-year terms where basically by the time someone's elected, they're already getting ready for the next election, and I just don't think that serves everybody well in the modern era.
In practice, Vermonters are loath to unseat an incumbent, though. So, you know, practically speaking, don't governors still have at least 4 or 6 years to try to get their priorities in place?
Well, I think if you ask governors when they first get elected, because of that loathness, to use your word, to unelect someone, do you feel totally secure as you approach your second election? They'd say, heck no. And they fight ferociously for those first 2 years to ready themselves for that election. The other piece is, after 2 years, we got this infusion of a ton of money into the state. For purposes which I think most Vermonters would say are rather unpleasant, you know, misinformation and all these, you know, nasty TV ads. So a four-year term, in my opinion, like every other state in America except for Vermont and New Hampshire, would allow the executive branch to actually move forward with more bold proposals rather than these piecemeal incremental ones we too often see.
The equal protections, the equal rights amendment that would protect all classes of people. So as you said, you're talking about gender and sexuality and race. Is that pro forma? You said all of these are controversial in their own way. I mean, I think the details of the wording are what kind of come into play about whether this is something that's easy to support or not.
Well, I think conceptually people believe we should extend this umbrella coverage in the Constitution. I guess in the sense it's controversial because once you start creating a list of protected classes, it introduces the question of whether there are omissions from that list. And so in each of these cases, it's not just that the concept is debated, but the wording has to be perfect. You know, it's deliberately hard to amend Vermont's Constitution. It should be. So if we're going to do it, we should get it right.
Yeah. And, you know, once you've started, I mean, that's the problem. You can't change the wording. So is it likely that that may be the one that sort of gets left off the table? I mean, certainly the four-year term also going to be very controversial. But
yeah, we have the next 2 years to work on these and any others that are proposed, because I have no doubt there will be other proposed amendments introduced over the next 2 years. The key is we should not rush through it. We should make sure that whatever language moves forward, if it does, that it's ready to stand the test of time.
We did get another, I think this is actually a request for a constitutional amendment, although it's not totally clear, but Mike in St. Johnsbury said, why does the legislature refuse to allow Vermonters the power to enact the laws we must live by? If we are competent enough to choose those who make the laws, then surely we are capable enough to tell those we elect what we want you to do once in office. And I think what Mike's referring to here is the idea of a referendum process, which many states have. And often that sort of people power is the way that progressive laws get pushed through, or ways that things that can't happen as easily at the legislative level move into the system. We've seen this a lot in marijuana. For example, we saw this in civil unions and same-sex marriage many years ago. So Vermont often says, we're the first state to do it legislatively. But maybe that's because we don't have a referendum process, should we?
Well, the problem with referendums is they are driven by money. And what is increasingly happening throughout the country is that people who are not just millionaires, but who are truly billionaires, are now deciding the major public policy questions of our time. And so if we want representative democracy to take a backseat, and we want people who are massively resourced to drive every single public policy conversation, then that's the road we should take, is move to referendums. I believe in a small state that the will of the people channeled through their representatives and senators has worked just fine, and that's the way we should keep it.
CJ in Mansfield emailed, will Senator Ash let the bill to raise the smoking age to 21 pass this year?
Well, it's received votes on the Senate floor before, and if it gets out of the Health and Welfare Committee, it will have a vote again. You know, one of my approaches has always been to support the work of my committees in the Senate, even when I don't always like every single bill coming out. So we like a good, healthy debate, and the best ideas get out of committee, and then we have fair fights on the floor.
speaking of your leadership style, is there anything that you learned in your first term as president pro tem that you will not do this time around?
Well, I think the key piece is the communication issues with the House and with the governor. And it's something I think all three sides of that triangle would agree to, is when you're all new to your roles, you're still figuring out how you relate to the other two. And while I think all three of us have goodwill and friendship amongst us, I think this time we'll go in with a more proactive communication style with each other, which I think will be good for the process.
Do you think senators should have a four-year term?
Well, that's always been the sticking point in the past, because the fear of allowing a governor to then have leverage with a four-year term while the legislature comes and goes every 2 years has frequently argued for having at least the Senate have four-year terms as well, which I'm totally open to. I know that the moment I say those words, 150 House members say, "What about us?"
And?
Well, that's a good one. Maybe we should leave that one up to the voters. I think that the U.S. Congress, frankly, has set it up for deliberately, where the representatives are elected every 2 years to reflect changing attitudes, even when they're quickly changing attitudes. It has longer terms for state for U.S. senators, largely to act as a cooling agent, so that you don't have that volatility in public attitudes through representation. So I think if we were starting from scratch and we could go back 200 plus years, the founders of the state, we'd probably have four-year terms for Senate, two-year for House. I know that that will be a huge debate with our House friends.
Good. Well, we look forward to that.
Yeah, you might want to sell tickets for it or do some fundraising off it.
Let's go to Fred calling in from Huntington. Hey, Fred, go right ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, morning. Real quick, there's a proposal on the wall, as you guys say, for alimony reform. It was put on the wall last year, I guess, and alimony affect, you know, 50% marriage is end in divorce, and of that, 70% end in alimony. And it affects many, many people in Vermont, and male and female, which also affects income and ability to spend and ability to pay bills, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it was something that, you know, there's so many other things that take precedent all of a sudden, you know, like the pot law and stuff like that. Alimony hasn't been looked at since the 70s, and it doesn't affect me anymore. I'm done paying alimony, but it does affect many, many others, and I'm just curious if that would possibly move around, so to say.
Yeah, Fred, thanks for the question. I appreciate it. What about that, Senator Ash, alimony reform?
Well, Fred raises a good question. You know, spousal support and alimony are obviously hugely important issues and complex ones for families going through it. The legislature, each of the last 2 years, has authorized a spousal support task force, which has been meeting. We extended them last year for one more year, I believe. Their report should be coming out imminently if it hasn't already. So the Judiciary Committees, both in the House and Senate, will certainly be looking at that, because it is a critical issue, as Fred pointed out. And things have changed. You know, when a lot of these laws were written, it was less likely that women would be in the workforce than they are today. And so the complexities of today's households has certainly merited taking a look, which we've done. And we'll have to review what the recommendations from that task force are.
We've also seen even the Vermont Supreme Court say to the legislature, you need to look at legally what makes a family and how we define parental rights and who is a parent. Is that something that's going to be taken up this term?
Well, last year we passed a bill which really flew under the radar around parentage. And with in the modern era, where in vitro fertilization and other means of impregnation are happening, who the parents are has become a more complicated question. And last year we passed basically a whole overhaul of the parts of statute related to that. And I remember standing on the Senate floor, and Peg Flory, who had been one of the leaders of that effort, I had said, you know, "Senator Flory, people won't appreciate the significance of what this bill that you've just moved through the process, but thousands of people will have more clarity in their lives as a result." So we have already taken great steps there, and I look forward to hearing from the public if there are more steps we do need to take.
Let's talk a little bit about paid family leave. This is an area in which there's some apparent disagreement between the democratically controlled legislature and the governor. The governor said in his inaugural address, he put it right out there, "I support paid family leave, but on a voluntary opt-in basis. This is in contrast to what has been floated as a thing that needs to be a mandatory process, something that employees and employers pay into so that when and if you need it, it's available for you and the pool is big enough. But this is also a question that brings in the question of the supermajority in the legislature. You know, is this something that could get past the entire legislature, or is there enough debate over who wants what and what this bill would look like that this could get bogged down this year?
Well, I think the governor's statement that he'd like a voluntary program, I've been hearing that from Republican governors throughout the country because they know leave programs for either people who've just had children or people to support a parent who might be ill or dying are generally popular policies. The thing with a voluntary program is that no one has been able to point out that it would actually work. If you have too few people paying in, there's not enough money for anyone to enjoy the benefits on the other side. That's the reason why the way it's been designed and passed the legislature last year was as basically a social program. Everyone pays in. Everyone has the right to benefit from it when they need it, if they have an eligible reason for being out of the workplace. So the issue about the veto-proof majority and whether that changes the thinking, you know, my hope is that we will work with the governor to arrive at a program that will actually work. I do not like the prospect of establishing important fundamental policies by veto. It's not the right way to create lasting policy. So hopefully we can find a way to come together on this.
Let's go to Sasha, who's calling in from Plainfield. Hi, Sasha. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm glad to hear from you folks. I talked to Senator Rash earlier this year. I was the person who proposed the resolution at the Vermont League of Cities and Town meeting in October asking that we actually finally end the reference to slavery in the Constitution. And I'm just wondering, I had hoped it would get passed by Martin Luther King's birthday, and I'm just wondering, where are we with that?
Well, I do remember that conversation, and thank you for the work you did at the VLCT meeting. Our committees have just been established this past Thursday, so actually tomorrow is the first day most of them will be meeting for an official committee meeting. The proposals that are being introduced, whether they be bills or constitutional amendment proposals, are about to be introduced. Many of them will be released tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, and they'll be sent to their respective committees. The moment it gets there, the committees will start taking it up. So the process is a deliberate one. It requires committees to sit down, hear from members of the public like you and other experts to make sure we've got it right. But we certainly won't sit on that proposal.
Senator, I think you're going to have to host. I have a tickle in my throat.
I've dreamt of this moment, so I can take over and
yeah,
ask myself the questions. Oh, softball after softball.
I did want to ask you about your acceptance speech. I was interested in your language about your acceptance speech, and I have some of it here, but you talk about two Vermonts, one Vermont and the other Vermont. And I was interested to hear, it was interesting to hear you elevate how people often feel like if they're low-wage workers or they don't have a higher degree, that they find themselves in the other Vermont where their needs aren't being met and it's more challenging. But that language seems also divisive to me, that we're qualifying two different Vermonts rather than one Vermont where we all live here and some people face greater hurdles than others. I'm curious about how you envisioned that speech and how you thought about that language and that characterization.
Well, I think Vermont often reverts to a sense of exceptionalism, that we do everything great here and that we take care of our people and everything's just fine. And what I'm trying to express is that we know that that's not the case. And sometimes things are pitted as Burlington versus the rest of the state or larger communities versus smaller. What I'm trying to describe are people who have been left behind by the economy, who policymakers often don't interact with on a regular basis in their lives outside of the legislature. And I was calling out all of us to step back and keep in our minds that the people who have been left behind by the economy, who struggle with addiction, the people who have mental health challenges, the people who do the work to support people going through those challenges, that those people have to be at the front of our minds. And I agree with you. The goal is to get us all into one experience, which is positive, where people have a chance at a successful life. But one of the key things, and the legislature's not always so good about this, In order to tackle problems, the first thing you have to do is make an honest assessment of the way things are. Everything is not just fine for many people out there. And so I was just trying to re-emphasize the need to step up and take care of the people amongst us who have fallen through the cracks.
That's Senate President Pro Tem Tim Ash. As reclamed as I am, I also can't get rid of this tickle. But
was that very
I'm
moving?
So sorry.
My final comments
clearly
have
moving.
Gotten to you.
Thank you so much for being on the program with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jane.